Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology, where you learn to simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for joining me today in this podcast. Let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get your free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at www.audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. I have a great show for you today. I'll be encouraging you that your time for change is now. I'll also be interviewing author and spoken word performer Alexis Rose, who shares her story of how she recognized her time of change and triumphed over emotional spousal abuse. You all know me as a psychotherapist, but many of you do not know me as a composer. My latest album, Restoration, was just released. Restoration is a continuation of the first album, Consolation. I like to think of these albums like books. Each original composition is written like a chapter in a book. And like in any story, the character goes from a sense of grief and loss, and at the end of Consolation, finds hope for his future. In Restoration, he has an awakening. And in that awakening, he recognizes all the things in his life which are not healthy, and it helps him come to a place of restoration, becoming greater than he was before. You may purchase this album on iTunes or any other digital music store. The name of the album is Restoration, and my stage name is James S. Miller. The name of the piece you are currently hearing is entitled Introspection. And now it's time for self-check-in. It's important for us to be able to separate between what our body feels like and what our emotions are. Sometimes we think they're one and the same, but they're really not. So just because you may have woken up in a bad mood does not mean you can't fulfill the responsibilities that you have to do today. And vice versa, you may have woken up today and not feel very well, but that doesn't mean that you can't be in a good mood. So on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 is the best you've ever felt and 1 is the worst you've ever felt. Go ahead and create those two scales for yourself. For example, for me, on a scale of 1 to 10, for my emotions, I'm feeling probably about an 8. I'm feeling pretty good. And then for my body, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm feeling about a 6. I got some good rest last night and I'm feeling pretty good. So when you can recognize that there's a difference between what your body feels like and what your emotions are, it helps you recognize what you can change. Your time is now. Anytime we want to try something new or change our life, we have a moment of grace. In other words, there's a time which is specifically allotted to us to allow for us to make this change. A practical example. Let's say you're sitting down in your couch and you had a really long day, and all of a sudden you feel the energy to get up and clean your house. But if you wait a second longer and think, oh, I'll just do it later, all of a sudden you no longer have the energy and then you don't do it. It's so important for us to understand that when we feel a certain way or we're supposed to do something or we feel it within us, that is a time that is specifically allotted to us to do it. Now, I don't mean this in a very mystical type of way. I'm just saying our body, our mind, and our spirit all work together to give us information to be able to do something. In a broader example, at work, you could be very frustrated with your job and frustrated with the inability to move forward. And then you have the idea, maybe I should do something on my own, or maybe I should strike out on my own. That moment, that energy that you're experiencing is your body's way, your spirit's way, and your mind's way of saying, now is the time to make that change. Because as soon as you do make that change, all of a sudden the energy that was specifically allocated to that new change becomes bigger and bigger. You'll have more and more energy to complete the new venture that you've started. Think of a snowball. You start a snowball in a really small little ball. You roll it down the hill. And all of a sudden, you have a large snow boulder. That's exactly the same way it is when we have this season of change. The great thing about these opportunities is if we miss it one time and we don't do it, well, it will circle back around again. It may not be that same day and it may not be that same week, but it will happen again. So the missed opportunities you have will circle back around. But the best rule of thumb is as soon as you feel something or experience something, you have to follow through with it. Because that opens up the door for bigger and better things, just like that snowball. And sometimes when we have this energy and we do start the plan, sometimes it takes a really long time for us to see the fruition of our work. But tenacity kicks in. That's when you have to recognize that it may not seem as if anything is going my way, but that's where we have to believe that our hard work and dedication is going to pay off. And when we truly start something and we expend that energy and there's more and more things that do come our way, that gives us the confidence to know that during these dark times that it is going to come to pass. Nobody can do this for you, because an opportunity will always circle back around until finally you have that aha moment where all you can think about is this new change. So rest assured, if you feel you've missed it in the past, it doesn't mean you're not going to be able to have this opportunity again. It will happen. So moving forward, now as soon as you feel it, as soon as you think it, as soon as you have the belief that you can do it, go ahead and do it, because you will be overwhelmed with how quickly things will change for you. And now a quick word from my sponsor. Audible.com is offering you, my listener, a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/JamesMillerLifeology. Many of you don't know this about me, but I'm an avid reader, so this is a no-brainer for me to go ahead and download any audiobook I'd like to read, specifically if I'm walking my dog, at the gym, or just even driving. So for you to get your free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/JamesMillerLifeology. They have over 180,000 books for you to choose from, so I'm pretty confident you'll find the one you're looking for. So check it out today. Alexis Rose is a poet, spoken word performer, and co-author of And I Thought Divorce Was Bad with other life lessons, as well as And I Thought Being Grown Up Was Easy. She is going to share her inspirational story with us today. Welcome to my show, Alexis.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mr. Miller.
I want to thank you once again for true transparency with my listeners here. There were some technical difficulties in the first interview that Alexis did. She did a phenomenal job. So I want to thank her on air for coming back to my show and doing a repeat. And I know it's going to be even better than the first interview.
I sincerely hope so.
You did wonderful last time. When I was reading your original bio, you have gone through a lot of things in your life, you know, some things that perhaps some people maybe even going through on their own today and didn't realize that perhaps some of the things you'll be discussing today are similar to some of their own stories. So I'm really excited for you to be able to tell a story, not that you had to go through it, but excited for you to teach the lessons that you would have my listeners hear today.
Well, I'm glad to be here to actually speak on this. I think it's very important that people know what emotional abuse is, and I hope my story helps with that.
I believe it will. But those of you who have not had a chance to watch the interview that I did with And I Thought ladies, you may go to my website, jamesmillerlifeology.com, and you can go to my media interviews, and you can see the wonderful interview I did with them. So now, Alexis, let's get right into your interview here. One of the things that you really speak about is emotional abuse. And would you like to start the interview with that? Where was a time when you really started to feel like you were emotionally abused?
I was standing in the kitchen and I was chopping up onions. And my husband told me that's not the way to do it. You know, he was calling me stupid and ignorant for being able not to do this correctly. And he just, like, I explained it to you so many times. You're not getting it right. I don't understand what you can't understand. And that's when I recognized that I have been chopping onions a very long time. And I probably was doing this correctly and it was efficient. And that's when I asked myself, well, if he's wrong about this or there's a different way to do it that's just as right as the way that he taught me, then why can't he be wrong about all the other things that he said? So why can't he be wrong about the ugly, the fat, the stupid, the nobody wants you in this world and where are you going and you have to stay with me and I'm the best you're gonna get? Why couldn't he be wrong about all of that as well? And that's when I kind of decided that he was going to be wrong. I was just going to assume that he was wrong because at that point I recognized I had turned myself into somebody different and knew that I hadn't recognized and wasn't just submissive. At that point, I was subservient.
Ah, there's a huge difference, yes. Well, you know, I think it's so interesting because there are so many everyday situations that we're in that we may not realize that we're experiencing something that is much greater than what the situation warrants. For example, for you, you're just chopping onions, and all of a sudden you're being told you're doing it wrong, and then you have that moment of epiphany of, wait a minute, this simple action of chopping onions is a representation of all these other things I've experienced. And I always think it's such a powerful moment when people can reflect, maybe in the past, of when there was a turning point in their life from something that was incredibly obvious, and that moment till afterwards it wasn't so obvious. And then all of a sudden people are like, that was a moment that changed my life.
That's so true. I've never thought of it like that, but chopping onions is a very menial task to be like, oh, I'm getting out of here. You know, this is beyond. Also, I wanted to say that for the people listening out there, you go, okay, chopping onions, that's very menial. But if I were to borrow my ex-husband's words, at that point, it wasn't at that point that he had suggested actually like selling me to another person for sexual favors and profiting from it. That wasn't the point that he had done that. But it had been introduced into our marriage more than once. And I had started to think possibly he was right. Possibly I was only worth this. Yeah. But at the onion point was when I was like, no, he's wrong.
Yes.
So I'm saying, like, it was just words. Mm-hmm. But those words had almost some days, like yesterday, I was laying at the ocean and I thought about it. I was like, you know, I could still have been trapped being a sexual slave with a contract on me if I hadn't been chopping that onion.
Exactly.
That's where my life would have gone.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's the thing. When there are so many times in our life when we have these opportunities or these aha moments, but for whatever reason, if we're not looking for it, or we're maybe more externally focused or don't really have our voice, we're not going to hear it. But the great thing about life, and for me, I have a very strong faith. And so for me, it's more about that divine appointment or those divine words are going to happen over and over until that person has that epiphany to say, no, enough is enough. I'm greater than what the situation warrants. I have a purpose. I have a destiny in my life. And I'm so glad to hear that you were able to recognize that. That aha moment of chopping onions was so powerful. And I get to speak with you today about this.
Yeah, I'm very happy about that as well.
Yes, I'm sure you are. I'm sure you are. So, you know, you had mentioned that you were going to be sold as a sexual slave and had a contract on you. Would you like to tell us more about that?
It sounds more exciting, as I said in the first interview, than it actually is. It was just that it had been suggested about, I think this was the fifth time it had been suggested in the last year of our marriage. And at that point, we were separated, and he was like, let's go to a family reunion. And his family isn't always on the correct side of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that I was going to go because he was like, it's the last thing you'll ever have to do as my wife. Don't worry about it. Da, da, da. Everyone told me not to go, but I have plans. And then he got drunker than I've ever known him get drunk about 48 hours before we were supposed to get on the plane. And he explained to me that his relative, who definitely dealt in the immoral favors,
sure,
was going to be the person that he was going to leave me with. He had all the plans of getting back on the plane within like 6 hours of us arriving at the family reunion and leaving me with her for the next 6 years to take the place of someone else that had quit.
Okay.
So I was supposed to be a prostitute for her for 6 years without my knowing.
Wow.
I was going to stay in that state and work for her.
Wow.
Had no idea about any of this. And so when he sobered up the next day, I called him to ask him if he was insane. You know, I thought maybe it was just, you know, drunk delusions or something. And he was so angry. He was just like, I can't believe that you won't go. I can't believe you won't get on this plane. I'm trying to save your life financially. You know, who's going to want you? I'm trying to make you want it. And I mean, he was so bloody angry. He would not talk to me for like a good 2 months. He wouldn't talk to me about anything because he was like, you made me lose $6,000. I already had my finder's fee. And yeah.
Wow. So he punished you. He punished you. Yes.
Which is ridiculous because that would have been a bigger punishment to me for those 6 years than anything, than him treating me in silence. I mean, yeah. So that's why I say, like, cutting the onion, if I hadn't taken time to think about that while I was cutting that onion, I might have said yes. I might have got on that plane. I might have been the person, like, because, I mean, when I first started off and I explained what he had said the night before, he asked, well, do you want to go? It makes sense. So you should just go. I mean, you're cute enough to do it. I think you're finally cute enough, so you should go.
Wow.
And I was like, no, I'm not going. And he was like, I don't understand. I don't get it. Granted, we had been separated for about 4 months. And so I had been surrounded with people who were, you know, building up my self-esteem even more and showing me my self-worth like every turn, all day, every day. So I knew that that wasn't what I wanted to do. And he was just in utter shock. He was like, you know, this is not the woman I married.
Yeah.
I can't believe you would give up something like this. And to me, it just didn't make sense. And he was like, I don't see how it doesn't make sense. And even today, I think about that. And I'm like, how could he not see how that couldn't make sense? And that bugs me. I think that is the last time he tried to send someone to take care of me permanently. It was about 3 weeks after that, but it didn't work out.
Yeah. Well, let's stop there for 1 second. I want to jump back to this because you and myself are logical people. And when we try and rationalize something with logic, It will never make sense to the person who is not using logic. When someone's very chaotic, when someone is very manipulative, when people are the type of person that will try and coerce other people to do things, it doesn't matter how much the logical person tries to explain something to them. It's never going to make sense. Even for you to think, this doesn't even fit into my worldview because it's so foreign to you, it will never make sense to you when you go back and think about it later. So one thing I really want my listeners to understand today is when we go back and try and fix something, even in our mind, we may not even talk to the person, but when we try and fix it or try and rationalize it and say, I just don't understand why this person would do it. The point is, you'd never understand it because it's so foreign to you. And so when we try and try and try to figure out what happened or why it happened, it is just going to be crazy making for you. I don't mean that word literally. But it's become so frustrating and so overwhelming because it will never make sense to you because it is not in your personality makeup. So to try, I'm not saying you, but just my listeners, to try and go back and fix something in your mind or try and get closure, that person can never give it to you. You can only get that closure by your choice, by what you perceive to be true. Because what really could someone do? If let's say if this person here were to say, oh, you're absolutely right. I shouldn't have done that. Is that going to then make up for everything else? No, it's not going to. So the point is when you don't want to be around someone, you'll never get closure from that person. You have to give that closure for yourself. Closure is only something that you create in your mind when you are ready to create it.
I completely agree with you, Mr. Miller. And I wanted to say, like, from my viewpoint, I've spent many hours, many days, many, many years wondering if I'd ever get an apology or if he'd ever see the logic. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, as long as I see the logic, mm-hmm. that's what's important.
Exactly.
And then that allows me to be here today to tell other people this story and be like, oh, I survived and I made it through because I could see the logic and I created my own closure, mm-hmm. started to, chopping
yes.
an onion.
Exactly. And that's when it all starts.
So an abuser never see that they're an abuser until they have to go through the same step that a person who's being abused goes through. Mm-hmm. They have to recognize it and then make the same step. So until they make those steps, please know that that person will never see it. I apologize. I wanted to say that.
No.
And I ended up at an onion. But
it's very true. When someone can't take responsibility for what they've done, you're absolutely right. Then they're never going to understand it. And they'll continue to push the responsibility onto someone else.
Yeah.
Now, moving forward, you said that there was a hit on you or a contract on you?
He had taken out three. The last one was the most obvious one because I don't think he thought that one out completely. I'm kind of sure it was in rage. But the guy was trying to break in the house. And I caught him and I was about to call the police. And he was like, I was supposed to, maybe the guy made it up. But I knew for sure there were two other contracts because someone called me to tell me that they had paid twice as much to keep me alive and that I should leave the house and never, ever talk to him again. And I was like, I'm not leaving my husband. I'm sorry. I love him. We're in this marriage. Mm-hmm. And the person that called me was a close relative of my husband, really, really close relative. And he was like, you don't understand. Your life is in danger. I'm not joking. This isn't funny. I had to pay this man like 12 grand to keep you alive.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's fine. And then he was like, he did it again. And he was like, all right, look, I really, really need you to leave him.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't leave him.
Yeah.
He left me. But for any woman out there, if someone ever let you know this, make a plan to escape.
Mm-hmm.
The third time was a bungling attempt. It was a young guy. He was known in the neighborhood for not being the most law-abiding
savory.
Citizen.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, savory person. And he was trying to break in. And when I caught him, and I had police calling 911 at the same time. And he was just like, I was supposed to meet a lady. And he told me I was supposed to meet Alexis. And I was like, Alexis moved.
Mm-hmm.
And so did her husband. And he was like, well, then I should probably give him his money back. And I was supposed to, like, and he was trying to get out the house. And he was like, I was supposed to kill her, is what he was saying, is getting out of the house. And I was just standing there looking at him like, oh, my God.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, what do you say to that? I mean, it's...
I was like, well, you can't kill someone who's moved. So maybe you should go and find them wherever they went. Just, mm-hmm. yeah. And that's all he kept saying. It was like, I was supposed to kill her. Oh, my God. I need to give him the money back. I'm supposed to kill her. And I was like, that's okay, just go ahead now. And I shut the door and he never ever came back. I just sat on my couch and I was like, oh, okay, you know, at first I was like, okay, because when you live in a relationship like that, these things become normal. It's mm-hmm. part of your life. It's part of your everyday. Just like him asking if, you know, he could sell me to some dudes in Vegas. That's normal. It's part of my everyday. I say no,
yeah.
You know, whatever. You're going to ask next week. it's normal. It's every day. Yeah. But like, as you look back, you're like, that's not normal. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I almost died.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the thing. I mean, you know, it's, you have those powerful memories now, but like you said, it's normalized then. And so what's so interesting is chopping an onion, which there's no emotions attached to that. And all of a sudden that was the moment for you to pull yourself out of it. So I think it's, once again, if I can stress this enough, that we will always have these opportunities of escape. We will always have these epiphanies that will come to us. But the point is that we have to be aware of it. We have to look for it. And granted, in that moment, when all these other things happened, of course you weren't looking for any way of escape because you loved your husband. You know, you were in a relationship and for whatever reason you stayed. But the point is that eventually something will break through in your mind to say, this is not right. This is not what I was meant to be. This is not why I was created. And so I just want to really point out to you that regardless of how it feels now, the amazing thing was you were given that gift of escape. And I'm just, once again, so happy to hear that. You know, I'm sure one of my listeners maybe today would say, well, Alexis, why did you stay in that relationship? You know, if it was very normal for you, and why do you think that you stayed there after you were told the first or second or third time that there was a hit on you?
I stayed because I didn't want to fail. Mm-hmm. I had never failed at anything in my life up to that point.
Sure.
Never, ever, ever failed. If I decided I wanted like an A in science, I was getting it. If I decided I wanted to start a business, I did it. I mean, never failed. And I wanted this, you know, when you're sold the bill of goods that you're going to have be a princess and you're going to find your Prince Charming. Once you find your Prince Charming, you want to stay and you want to make that work to the best. And obviously, since he's pointing out that it's really not him, it's you, you're like, oh, so I just need to fix it. I just need to fix it. It's just my fault. I just need to fix it. So you try to fix it because this is your perfect ending. This is your Cinderella moment. And it's getting bad, but, you know, you accept normal. You accept it like this is his normal. Mm-hmm. So I have to accept his normal, and I need to work with it. I also loved that man. Mm-hmm. Really loved that man, which is sad because I was having a conversation with my girlfriends yesterday. And they're like, you're still defending him. And it's been 12 years later, and I haven't fully stopped defending mm-hmm. him because I still love that man.
Yeah.
You know? Well, not enough to ever take him back.
Yeah, of course, but, of course. Well, I think also when you say it's Prince Charming, maybe one of the things, and this is the thing I was actually talking about with some of my patients the other day, is when it comes to, you know, we have an idea of what somebody represents. So you separate between the representation of that relationship. In other words, if you said Prince Charming, and I'm not, obviously you're not my client, so I'm not talking to you in this way, but I want my listeners to understand that if someone thinks someone is Prince Charming, or someone thinks that this person is the ideal man or ideal spouse, well, that may be true, but you want to separate from what that person represents. For example, if someone finds that they have a lot of passion with this person, so they think, oh, this is the perfect relationship. Or if someone finds that this person is most successful and they have all these things that they can buy them, you know, and that's their idea of what a perfect person is. But except what that person represents. So remove that person from that relationship, and that's where you'll see what you really want. It's really not about that person. It's just what that person represents to the other person. And that's why there's such a draw there as well. And by no means do I pretend like I know your story, because obviously I don't. But that's typically what I found overall, is that when people superimpose or overlap those ideals with that person, that's when they can sometimes get trapped, because it's what that person represents and not truly who that person is.
If I may take the moment to go back to that onion, and as you were saying, I had superimposed Prince Charming onto him. Granted, he also had money that I could never have. That was financial abuse.
Sure.
He's tricking me to like $20 a month.
Wow.
But he literally had seven figures in the bank at all times.
Wow.
But I superimposed this Prince Charming because he had everything I wanted, all the looks, all the charisma and everything. And then when I was chopping that onion, I recognized I had a choice to make. I could stay, which would have been the dumb choice. And that is the choice I took, because I was afraid of failure. I was more afraid of failure than I was of actually being in an abusive relationship. Uh-huh. And I did love that man. Or I could continue to knowingly superimpose over what he said. So when he said I was fat and I was ugly, I heard I was beautiful and I was one of the most prettiest women you could ever see in the world. So if you are a woman out there and you have that choice and you have that aha moment, please choose to leave.
Yes.
Because it really is not worth it.
Yes.
I mean, it's been almost 12 years and I can walk past something and I don't even know why, and I'll start crying, and I'll be right back in that moment, and I'll remember what really happened.
Yeah.
He didn't say I was beautiful. He didn't say I was wonderful. It's like, oh my God, that's what he said. Oh my goodness, he tried to strangle me while I was asleep, you know, try to suffocate me with a pillow. All these things, like, I pushed them out of my mind. Yeah. I put other things on top of them. But if you can, and you get that moment, save yourself the suffering. Yes. Just walk away.
Yes. Well, let's talk about your plan of escape. How did you come up with your own plan of escape?
I really talked to other women about their plan of escapes because I did not come up with a plan of escape. He left me because I got fat. I went from a 6 to an 8 and he was like, I can't take it. Wow. I'm gone.
Goodness.
I should say that with emotional abuse, I said that I'd made my own plan of escape in one way only. That I decided that he could no longer control my mind and my thought process. That's something that's an escape in its own right.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that I find is very important, especially in my case, was the financial abuse. It was because he gave me $20 a month. And after the chopped onion thing, I knew I did have to leave. So I took the $20 a month and I immediately took like $3 out. I knew it was going to take me 3 years to leave. And I was hoping to God I would still be alive and breathing to get out of there.
Sure.
But I would take $3 and I went and I had a bank account because I was always worried that he would do something like this. That was all my own. And I started putting that $3 in there and it started adding up. And then I would tell him that I was going to the laundromat. I would invent dirty clothes. And I called some people and I went back to house cleaning and I cleaned their house instead of going to the laundromat. I washed the clothes while I was there. I asked them if I could wash the clothes while I cleaned their house. And that wasn't a problem. So, I mean, I came back. Everything was clean and beautiful and wonderful. But I had made extra money and I immediately went and put that in my bank account because I was like, I don't think I can take 3 years.
Yeah.
If you can take a moment and find finances, because that's the biggest part, you can actually afford to leave. Because if he's controlling your money and he's controlling your thoughts, you can't even think clearly to find the finances to leave. Once the thought thing clears up, you now have to deal with the finances, the real practical part. That's what I was able to do. Yeah. Granted, when he left, I had a few $100 to, you know, start my life.
But you started your life. Yeah, exactly. And look at you today. That's wonderful. Alexis, I want to thank you so much for how forthcoming you've been and being able to talk about this. And, you know, I know at times it can still be overwhelming for you, but I want to really thank you for being on my show today and being able to share your story. I'm sure my listeners today have learned a lot, and I'm sure that you've touched many lives as they've heard your story. So, Alexis, if my listeners would like to find out more information about you and your speaking group, where would they find your information online?
You can go to www.andwethought.com. That would be andwethought.com. And you can also find us on YouTube at the And I Thought Ladies and Facebook at the And I Thought Ladies. There's a blog talk that's the And I Thought Show and a podcast, the And I Thought Show. We also have the books. And I Thought Divorce Was Bad, which has some of my stories, a lot of my poetry in it. And I Thought Being Grown Up Was Easy has more of me being lighthearted. If the group says I'm never lighthearted, but it's as close as I'm going to get. And then we have a couple other books coming out. And the last one, And I Thought He Was the One, is going to have my full story in there. I think it's about time for me to try to step out. And I do know that there's still people looking, but I think I need some bravery and to tell more of my story.
Yeah. Well, Alexis, once again, thank you so much for being a guest on my show today.
Thank you so much, Mr. Willow. It's been a pleasure to be here.
I also want to thank you, the listener, for joining with me today. Please subscribe to this podcast through whichever podcast portal you joined with me. If you're using iTunes and you like what you hear, please rate this podcast as well as leave your comments on the iTunes podcast page. Also, please visit my website where you may see all my YouTube episodes and published articles I've written for you. You may also enroll in the Lifeology Academy I created where you can take self-directed courses which are designed for successful people just like you. You may find all this information at jamesmillerlifeology.com. Once again, thank you so much for listening to this podcast episode today. Have a fantastic week, and I look forward to talking to you very soon.